This episode of All My Friends Are in Bar Bands was recorded on the land of the Gadigal Wangal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to elders past and present, and we acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded, and this always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. Enjoy the episode. Everybody, it's David James Young for another week of All My Friends Are in Bar Bands. We're back. It's really, really nice to be saying that again. Been super, super busy, been traveling around. I was in Brisbane, and then I was in Melbourne, and now I'm back. And, you know, just slowly working my way through every gig ever, as everyone that knows will testify to. It's Friday and we have a brand new episode for you, and I'm really, really excited about this one. This is the literal embodiment of All My Friends Are in Bar Bands. This is two people that I've known for many, many years, and two people that I'm really, really stoked to finally properly chat to in depth about everything that we've been through. We are talking today to Jonathan Boulay and Kirsty Tickle. Jonathan Boulay is a Sydney-based singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist who has put out music under his own name and has also put out music with bands such as Parades and Snakeface. And right now he is one half of a band called Party Dozen with Kirsty Tickle. Kirsty is originally from Toowoomba in Queensland and has also played in groups like Little Scout and the John Steele Singers, and has also toured with Henry Wagons and done a bunch of bits and pieces all over the place. Both are remarkably talented songwriters and instrumentalists and performers, but above everything else, they are good friends of mine and have been for the better part of 7 years. I've known them both for a really, really long time, and I've seen them through a lot of their different projects, including Parades and Little Scout, as I mentioned, two of my all-time favorite Australian bands who put out two of my all-time favorite records. I try to give them a plug at the end. I get Foreign Tapes right, which is the name of their Parades album, but I accidentally call the Little Scout album Take Your Life instead of Take Your Light. And I don't know why I did that. I may have been deliriously tired from staying out with friends of the show, Luca Prazzi, the night before. Maybe. I'm not going to blame them, but maybe I am blaming them. Who's to say? Who's to say? Jesus Christ. But yes, Take Your Light is the debut album from Little Scout that came out in 2011. I want to say 2011. Could be 2010. It's around that period. It's around the early 2010s. But yes, goddamn life-changing record. Could not recommend it high enough. Also could not recommend Party Dozen high enough. It's a kind of free-form, weird, experimental, jazzy noise duo. Sax and drums, samples, not much else. All instrumental stuff. Really, really cool to listen to and to watch. Their debut album's out now. It's called The Living Man. I strongly recommend it. Put aside half an hour and get your tiny mind blown. They will be doing a bunch of shows coming up, including the 10th birthday show for Oxford Art Factory, which is coming up in October. So, yeah, definitely check that one out. That should be one hell of a night, I'm going to say. I will wager that quite heftily. But yes, Jono, Kirsty, great, great, great friends of mine. Really, really stoked to have them on. Really, really stoked to be talking about Party Dozen, Parades, Little Scout, everything in between. So, I'm going to get you into that in just one moment. But before I do that, quick and timely reminder, this podcast is supported by people just like you. And people like this following group of legends that support the podcast financially over on Patreon. Massive, massive thank you to Amy Gray, Andrew Nicholson, Blake Henequin, Britt Andrews, Eleanor Shepherd, Hazel Chan, Heath Anthony, Jeremy Neal, Karen Dennis, Kirsten Day, Christy Wanmaker, Leslie Bowden, Liam Sherlaw, Lily Belnick, Matthew Lynch, Max Quinn, Paul McWhirter, Rachel Maria Cox, Ryan Dunn, Sian Vanacudi, Tom Brown, Tom Kennedy, Tom Jenkins, and Zoe Lane. If you would like to join that list of absolute champions of the goddamn universe and support this podcast for as little as $1 a month, then that's a thing you can do. You can do that by heading over to patreon.com/barbands. We'll work out the rest from there. That's patreon.com/barbands. Plenty more coming up for you. Got some really great internationals and some really cool local artists coming up. We got a huge backlog to get through. I'm trying my absolute darndest to not make this a monthly thing. So hopefully you'll hear back from me sooner than later. But in the meantime, let's have a chat with Party Dozen, Jonathan Boulay, and Kirsty Tickle. My friends are in bar bands. Today, I would like to introduce you to my friends, Jonathan Boulay.
Hi.
And Kirsty Tickle.
Hello.
How are you guys?
Very well.
Ooh, look at that. It's like you guys can finish each other's...
breakfast.
Exactly. We're here. We're upstairs, just directly next to the Red Rattler in a little studio, partially. Does Burke own this as well, or did...
Yeah, those guys built this place from
scratch.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Simon Berkelman, former guest, lifetime hero of the universe.
Sure, yes.
Yeah.
Friend
yes.
to all.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just one of those people that's instantly affable. Like,
yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
I've never heard anyone have a bad word to say about that guy.
No. Maybe that's the bad thing about him.
Yeah.
He has no flaws.
Oh, he's so nice.
He's too nice.
Yeah. Can't be trusted.
He kills people at night time when he's around.
How long have you guys been up here?
Almost a year, I reckon.
Has it been a year?
Oh, I don't know. I think so.
I feel like it's more like 6 months. Maybe my perception of time is not very good.
Yeah.
It's not founded in reality.
Yeah, before this we were in the city and then... we sort of had to move and this came up and it's so good because there's so much natural light.
Yes.
Lovely.
It's also handy that you guys are a two-piece if anyone else tries to fit in here.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a cozy space.
It's not the biggest of spaces.
Yeah, but it does the job.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. All right. So, Jonathan. Jono.
Yes.
This is the first time that I've called you Jonathan in years. That's a weird thing to think about.
Usually only when I'm naughty.
Yeah, exactly. I think the first time we met was either Homebake 2009 or Come Together 2010. Like, it was around that period, around the time that first solo record came out.
Yeah.
Back when I actually called you Jonathan, and then that's when I was just like, oh, wait, no one calls him that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
A real, real long time. Yeah, you had little longer hair.
I had long boyish
hair. Long boyish. Baby face.
Yeah, little baby face.
Sure.
Oh, you were all little baby faces. It was like you and Dave and Ravi and...
Yeah, the whole gang.
Yeah, the whole gang of little baby boys.
You would have only been about 19 at that point.
Yeah, that's right at the start of it. So 19, 20.
Hectic. Oh my God. What do you remember about that time? Because like... that took off super quick, like, around the time of that first record. Like, you guys were playing pretty much everywhere, and you got, like, a lot of big support slots and stuff like that.
That's
a lot to take in at that kind of age, isn't
it? Yeah, totally. I think they started us on the Tame Impala tour.
Yeah.
And we'd never played... like, I'm a drummer up until that point.
Yeah,
suddenly I had to stand up with an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
And sing.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, all right, the tour starts in 3 months. And I was like, shit. And so I called on Ravi, Dave, Waddy, Harrison, Joss. And we're just like, let's, you guys want to do this? And they're like, yeah, sweet, let's do it. And they threw us in the deep end and we started playing on that tour. And I can't imagine how shit it would have been for a long time as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And but we'd finish playing and people would be like, that was awesome. And I was just like, no, it wasn't. Like, what were you listening to? I don't understand. But it was, yeah, it was good to get into that straight away. So we had to learn how to do it properly.
Yeah. And whatever happened to that other band anyway?
Which band?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
It's not like they went on to anything else.
I mean,
like,
I think it helped.
You survived. That other band, they've fucking gone to the annals of history.
It really helped that we supported them on that tour, because they would have gone nowhere.
Yeah. So, maybe a year later, Parades are on tour with Little Scout.
Yes.
And that is where I meet you, Kirsty.
Yes.
And
2010, the funnest year.
Oh, what a time.
So much touring, yeah.
The turn of the decade. What a time. It's weird to think that, like, to be, like, nostalgic for that time, considering it doesn't feel that long ago, but you, like, look at everything now, all those bands have broken up, a lot of those venues have shut down.
So true.
Like, and you're just like, oh my god, like, I'm an artifact already.
Yeah. I think Jono got called a veteran in an interview recently, actually, which was pretty funny.
<That's awesome. laughs> I love it. That's great.
Veteran before 30.
Yeah.
You're doing good.
You clocked it.
Yeah, like, everyone's a veteran, you know, if there's time passed before them.
Yeah.
I suppose so. Yeah.
Like, we look back at that time, we'll look back at this time. Mm. And then we'll be in another time when we look back at this time.
Fucking hell. We've gotten some meta already.
Yeah.
You see, time is a very complex subject.
Save that for another podcast, I reckon.
Yeah, like idiots talking about time. Oh, one time.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if that was a thing.
Sure.
Was that the first time you'd done, like, a big proper sort of tour?
No, you know what? Bringing back Simon Berkman.
Hey!
The first ever tour we did was Little Scout, Philadelphia Grand Jury, and Bells Will Ring.
Holy shit!
And it was our first. We did a big, like...
That's a sign of the times right
there.
Yeah,
12-date tour, I think. I was 18 at the time. It was 2008 maybe?
Yeah, wow.
So I was a little baby, and that was my first tour.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hectic.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And they all stayed at my parents' house in Toowoomba, I remember, when we played a Spotted Cow show, and it was really nice. We all got to know each other so well. And Ivan Lisiak?
Yes.
Who's amazing. He was drumming for...
One of the best drummers in the country.
One of the best drummers in the country. He was drumming for Bells Will Ring at the time.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, and he, like, from that tour, like, we've been friends ever since.
Mm.
That's great. So good. I love that guy.
Yeah, how could you not?
Yeah.
He's just a wonderful little weirdo.
Yeah. The best. Yeah.
Just a seasoned grindcore drummer that wears turtlenecks and plays in, like, flashy bands with, like, Jack Cowell and shit.
I know.
It's just like, what are you doing? Like, I'm just half expecting him anytime he's playing in one of those, like, classier, like, more, like, fancier bands. I'm just like, just fucking break one out, man. Just booga 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 booga. Because you can just tell, like, he just wants to fucking do it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And can.
Yeah. Oh, he can and will. He just has to wait for everyone to leave and then just, like, looks around, makes sure no one's watching.
Yeah.
And then everyone's looking and it's like, oh, boom, pa, boom, boom, pa, boom, pa, boom, boom. Oh, what a champion. Oh, so... I begin these by talking about the initial interest in music, where it stemmed from being something that you were maybe observing on TV or maybe listening to on the radio or whatever, and kind of getting an interest into being something that you actually wanted to do. Jono, tell us a little bit about how music kind of factored into your childhood.
Earlier on, I had some behavioural issues.
Oh, right.
Yeah, as like a way to deal with it, my parents kind of got me a drum kit when I was young, and I took to it. Because who wouldn't? You get to smash the shit out of a thing and it makes a lot of noise.
This way, he wasn't smashing the shit out of any other kids. So that's good.
Sure, yeah. Put that energy towards the drum skin instead of human skin. So yeah, I guess that's where that started. I just kept playing it, and then, you know, you get into high school and you find other friends that are in bands, and we found parades in high school. So we started playing.
Yeah, no shit.
Doing punk music together. Like, you know, like we all loved listening to Refused and Thursday.
So Parade started out as a punk band.
Yeah, yeah. We wanted to just be the craziest, heaviest, weird band around. So we loved Dillinger Escape Plan and, you know, Thursday, Poison the Well, all those cool emo bands back then. And yeah, we'd try and kind of emulate all of those bands together into the same kind of weird, you know, whatever kids do in their high school bands. But yeah, it was just really loud. And the idea at shows for us was to be like, let's be the craziest, like wildest physical band.
Mm.
And so we'd go crazy and like throw our bodies around, but I'm sure we weren't playing any notes. Like, it just would have sounded like one of those Shreds videos online. But we're just thrashing as hard as we can. And that's, yeah, that was kind of the whole deal. And then eventually, you know, we got over that and we started doing parades.
Yeah, wow. Kirsty, what about you? Where was music kind of a thing for you? Like, were you kind of like a piano lessons kid? Or
I'm full classically conservatorium trained.
Oh, look out.
Yes.
Here she is.
No, so I started piano lessons at like 4.
Oh, shit.
Because all my siblings did it, so I wanted to do it as well. And I landed on woodwind when I was in high school. But I also did like acoustic shows when I was in high school. Did like some battles of the bands and stuff. And then the first ever recording, I was laughing because I was looking at some blog site yesterday and it was Stu Larsson talking about like how he's like tours all over the world. He's like this Australian singer-songwriter. And that was the first ever record that I worked on, was one of his really early EPs.
Yeah, no shit.
Because he was from the same town as me. But then I went to like the con and did clarinet for 3 or 4 years and then decided it was more fun touring.
Yeah.
Went that way. Yeah. It's been nice with Party Dozen though, because I can actually do the thing that I'm skilled at the most. Yeah.
The saxophone.
Well, you know. It's all smush and mushness.
Right. Oh, well. They're all the same.
It's all the same.
You heard it.
Yeah. Where'd you grow up, Jono?
I grew up in country Victoria.
Right.
In a town called Wangaratta. And
how far away is that from civilization?
It's far. It's not that. It felt far. It was kind of like 2.5-3 hours north of Melbourne, up near the border where Victoria meets New South Wales.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a small country town. It's like 100,000 people.
Isn't that big? I thought it was like much smaller.
Maybe a bit less. Maybe 50,000. Anyway, it's pretty
somewhere
small.
In between.
Like, it's small enough to consider it a place that you don't want to stay too long.
Mm.
I mean, we saw, there was a lot of country town problems that would arise as people stayed there for too long and, you know, all got stuck there for too long and that kind of stuff happened. So, yeah, well, once we finished primary school, we moved up to Sydney and I've been there ever since.
Whereabouts in Sydney were you? You were a North Shore kid, weren't you?
No, we're in a northwest suburbs, the Hills District.
Ah, yes.
The Bible Belt.
Yeah.
the safe zone. The cultural black hole.
Yes.
It's a place.
Oh, it certainly is.
And that's it. That's where all the parades boys were from originally.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been like one of those classic core things where it's just like, only like 3 or 4 other people like the kind of music that you like, so you all just bandy together. It's just like, we're friends now.
Yeah, it was a very tight community.
Yeah.
And we try and put shows on at the local youth place, and there was a little bit of a group that would start to turn up, and yeah, it was fun. It was fun for a while. There's just not a lot happening out there.
Yeah. And you're small town Queensland, yeah?
I was born in Moree in North New South Wales.
Oh, right, yeah.
Northwest New South Wales. Yeah. And then, during primary school, moved to Toowoomba. And, yeah, I mean, the town's changed so much. My parents still live there, and it's a lot more cultural now, actually. There's a lot of cool stuff happening, lots of, we were back there about a month ago for, like, a weekend, and there was a street art festival on. Mm-hmm. And it was actually pretty cool. It had a really nice vibe around the town. But same shit. Like, small town problems. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Were you kind of into music that was, like, not out, like, super accessible or anything like that, where you had to, like, find other people that were interested in what you're into?
Yeah, there were so many stages. There was, like, my best friend TJ and I, we both listened to a lot of, like, 70s punk for a while.
Oh,
and
nice, yeah.
I also had, like, you know, big love for you know, Radiohead and...
Yeah.
And Fiona Apple.
Oh, hell yeah.
Thing. Yeah, when I was younger. So it was, like, I still remember being teased about... saying my favorite band was Fiona Apple by primary school kids, and I was like, I don't know,
that's not a band. Shut up!
Yeah, shut up! She's awesome.
God no, damn!
Yeah,
this world is bullshit.
Yeah, I know. God, can't even like a good artist without someone teasing you these days.
Okay, first time you ever played live, Jono, go.
That's a hard one. I have to delve into my mind for that.
Here we go.
I would say maybe the earliest one I could think of. There's probably ones before that. I feel like with the Parades guys, because we're in school. So we
was it always called Parades?
No, oh no. There were some terrible names.
What do we got?
We started with
Brooklyn.
We had Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Because it was a foreign place that we'd never seen or been before. We thought it sounded pretty cool.
Yeah.
But there's also one on the north, like an hour north of Sydney.
So there was two. Yeah, that's right.
So it's not really that cool. We went through 8-Ball.
Uh-huh.
We went through Easy Money.
Yes.
The Green Datsun. because the Green Datsun got pulled over outside of our rehearsal space, like my house.
Yeah.
And it was there for a couple of weeks. So we ended up like getting photos in front of it. I'm like, this is cool. It's a green car. So there's just kid stuff like the Green Datsun, Ass Cold,
City Escape Fire,
and then we landed on City Escape Fire for a while.
Yeah,
and then Parades.
City Escape Fire was a very, very like post-hardcore Blood Brothers name. Yeah,
that's a very 2000s name. We thought it was pretty cool.
Were there any exclamation marks in there? That would
no. Sadly. We should have had some weird X's and exclamations and caps.
Yeah. So the first show was, like, PCYC, Youth Centre deal?
It would have been. For me, I can think of the Castle Hill Walkathon.
Nice!
So, they do, like, one of those...
Did 20... you play in a flatbed truck?
Yeah, pretty much. It was one of those 24-hour, they walk around the oval things, and they raise money, they raise awareness and money for cancer, I think?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so we're basically standing on this flatbed truck in the middle of this oval.
Mm.
And it was freezing cold as well. Like, it was getting all dewy and cold, and you could see your breath, and we were trying to play, and it was freezing. Like, our fingers were cold. And I remember Scarpin, our bass player, he decided that during the big part of one of our songs, he was going to stand up on my bass drum, do a sweet jump off it.
Oh, no.
And he climbs up on my bass drum and everyone's like, yeah. And then out of the corner of the crowd, I hear my mum and she's like, no.
Get down from there, Michael. Yeah,
she was so being mum.
You bloody idiot, Michael.
And everyone's like, yeah. And no.
That's so funny.
You're going to hurt yourself. And he did. I think he jumped off. I think it was fine.
Of course.
I feel like earlier in the set, as soon as we started, Scuppin took a spill because it was like slippery. It was a little bit wet on the ground.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we start thrashing straight off the bat and he just like, what? Slips over and
boom.
Like, lands on his back. And he's just, I think he was just lying there kind of in shock, but still playing the song. And we're, like being nervous kids. We're so nervous. We're just all like, oh, he fell over. Oh, it's so embarrassing.
Fuck, that's heavy.
And we ended up doing like, you know, we're doing a cover of Thrice. We're doing a cover of Thursday. And what else do we, we played all of our favorite bands.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
It was a fun gig.
Good shit.
Scared shitless.
Because, yeah, I can't imagine yours was as exciting as that.
No, it definitely
wasn't. Did anyone fall over?
No, one fell over. No, I remember...
What Thursday song did you cover?
Sheet. I did, like, a battle of the band. So I'm gonna go to the first Little Scout show, because I think it was the first proper show.
Oh, that was your first band?
Little Scout was my first band.
Yeah, wow.
Before that, I'd only ever done solo stuff. I was just out of school, but it was at Rick's in Brisbane.
Before
Rick's changed hands, and it was a three-piece. And when Pat sang, sometimes Mel played drums, because that's a secret that my sister can actually play drums and did play drums for a long time. I was just 18, like pretty much the week after my 18th birthday, we scheduled a show in. and because I couldn't play in any of the Brisbane venues until I was old enough. And yeah, it was fun. It's good. Good times.
Did you ever play solo around town or anything like that? Or
in Toowoomba, I did.
Yeah, I played a bit.
Just acoustic, singer songwritery kind of.
Yeah, we play guitar or piano or
guitar.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that very guitar over there. I don't use it anymore.
No shit.
I've had it since I was 14.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Will you play us something?
No.
Oh, can you even remember any of those songs?
You know, I can remember them, and my best friend will bring them up sometimes because she can remember them really well from, when I was younger. I played this festival, actually. Mm. God, so many memories. I played this festival. It was called, like, Woodstock or something like that, but it was in, like, it was in the sunshine.
Pretty sure that is. Yeah.
I know.
Wait a minute, are you Jimi Hendrix?
Like,
what?
They were doing this whole thing where they were like, it was in the country and it was just in this kind of field and stuff. And I played this weird festival and I played acoustic at it and it was bizarre. And I can't remember who headlined, but it was somebody really like funny, like, I don't know, some country Australian legend.
Lee
like,
Kernaghan?
It may have been someone like that. Yeah,
maybe so Lee played, or Tanya Kernaghan, one of the Kernaghans.
Could have been one of the Kernaghans.
Sure.
Yeah, but I think it only lasted 1 year, that festival. Went into bankruptcy afterwards because it wasn't very good.
Ugh. You single-handedly took down the festival.
Not the last one.
Just one by one. Yeah. I called it. Okay, so City Escape Fire ends or just changes?
Yeah,
or what?
Changed.
Yeah.
It morphed into parades.
Right.
Because there was, along towards the end of it, there was kind of a bit of overlap where we started trying to change the music. And, someone would come in with some more kind of electronic sounding stuff and we'd be like, oh, how can we fit this in with the crazy heavy stuff? And eventually we're like, oh, let's just do all this. There seems to be a lot more ideas in this style than the old style. So
yeah.
We just kind of changed the whole format and turned it into more of a pop thing, I guess.
Yeah, sure. And was it always just the four of you? Or did you have other people coming and going?
We added some people along the way. I think there was a spell there where we wrote a lot of songs with like male and female vocals.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And eventually, we kind of always felt like we had to replicate that live, that we always had to have the female vocal there because we did it on the record. But we realized after that, we're just like, we don't have to be true to the record for every single detail. So eventually it just turned back into the four of us again, and that's how we worked best.
Because I remember Alex was playing with you for a while.
Yeah, we had the girls from Q.
Yes.
Freya and Alex.
R.I.P.
And another great Sydney act from around that time.
Yeah, totally.
I remember seeing them play at the Red Rattler once and we were like, oh, we should, they're too busy, they're probably too big for us. And we asked them if they'd play and like do the female vocals and the keyboards and extra stuff like that. And they were just like, yeah, I'd love to. And it was, we were just so surprised. And we're like, all right, sweet. This band just became really strong. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. So yeah, that was going on before you were experimenting doing the solo stuff, or
I think
kind of happen in tandem?
Yeah, like I was always making music away from the band.
Yeah.
And then, putting it online and just having it there because it was just something else to do, something creative. And eventually, something got on radio and it took off from there.
Yeah, was that a weird thing for you to, because like, you'd spent so much time working with the guys in parades and, doing music like that. And then like one song will just of your own will just have that kind of unexpected momentum. You're just like, oh, really? Like out of everything I've done, it was like that one.
Yeah, sure. Totally. I think a lot of artists probably get that.
Yeah, for sure.
You make something that a lot of people can grab onto and it's not necessarily defining for your musical tastes, but if they like it, it takes off and you'd be silly not to go with it and to just let it happen organically. So,
yeah.
And when you're young and that happens, you're just like, okay, I'll go with this. This is cool. This sounds fun.
Yeah. So, Kirsty, you're 18. You've just turned 18. Things are taking off a little scale. Like, Yeah. What are your some like favorite memories from around that time? Because like obviously that's such an exciting thing to, you know, have this band and this kind of momentum going. Like obviously it like there was a few years before the first record would come out, but like you guys put in a lot of work before that record came out. I remember that.
Yeah, we did a couple of EPs and we played live a lot.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of touring. I think we were really lucky, actually, with the kind of touring we did, because a lot of it was with like bands like Parades or Q, or you know, Philadelphia Grand Jury and Cloud Control. We used to play with a lot.
Yeah.
And like those friends of the show. Those friendships have lasted like across the board. I think we were in a really lucky time where like there was this real camaraderie in the Australian music scene. We all used to crash at each other's houses. Like anytime we came to Sydney, we'd stay with like Richie Cuthbert. Or then when we met the Parades boys, would stay with them and vice versa. And it was just such a fun, exciting time to be a touring musician in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, it was good. I was in a band with my sister and that, like, in the early days had its, like, ups and downs, but eventually it was only good things, which was great, you know, as we both got a bit older and we both realised that we were each other's best ally. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So did you two kind of get into music around the same time? Were you kind of, like, showing each other music and stuff like that? Like, or was it ever in the back of your head that you'd play music together, or...?
Really, I sort of jumped on board with Little Scout. It was definitely Mel and Pat's project.
Yeah.
And I just jumped on board to play live. And then over the years that morphed into, like, I always played on the records as well. But then probably when we did Take Your Light, maybe. Yeah, that would have been the first time that we all sort of started to collaborate in the writing process together. Yeah. And then when we did the last record, it was much more collaborative.
Yeah.
Much more even. And I think the writing paid off for it because, it, you know, having four people's ideas for arrangements is always excellent because everyone adds their own little bits and pieces, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you look back at, you know, going between the solo stuff and the Parade stuff as well, some of your personal highlights? What do you look back on as, like, some of the best moments of that period of having both going pretty, like, on a relatively pretty big scale at the same time?
I guess it's all the stuff that Kirsty's been saying.
Yeah, because a lot of it was shared, you know. Yeah.
Like, we'd always be meeting new people and then re-meeting people that we'd just met, and it's kind of, everybody was just keen to have a fun time and be friends, and it's just, yeah, it was exciting. Like, I was happy to sleep on someone's floor with, like, a pillow under my hip because it was hurting because I was on the floor, and, like, just, yeah, you know, you'd find anywhere you could stay and it'd just be like, oh, thanks, like, this is awesome. We're driving around the country playing shows that, like, a couple of people give a shit about. It was a really nice experience with friends as well. You're just traveling with friends, playing music, and, like, that's just, what more can you ask for?
Yeah, exactly. I guess while, you know, that kind of camaraderie and that touring was happening as well, both of you got to, you know, do some bigger shows and play with, like, international acts and stuff like that as well. Was that kind of an intimidating thing in the back of your head, being like, oh, we can't fuck this one up, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
Sometimes. It was more like venues, like playing on such big stages.
Yeah.
We supported Belle and Sebastian. At the Tivoli in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Which was amazing. Such a beautiful venue. And weirdly enough, like, we had become friends with their trumpet player through doing shows with Camera Obscura.
Oh, sure.
Back in the day. And then the other trumpet player on the night for Belle and Sebastian was my old high school music band director.
No kidding.
Yeah. And he was just like, what are you doing here? I was like, I'm supporting. What are you doing here? He's like, I'm playing trumpet for Belle and Sebastian. I was like, far out. And, yeah, it was such a surreal kind of experience to have that. But, I reckon one of my favourite tours we did was the New Pornographers tour.
Oh, sure.
That was really fun. They were really great people, really good songwriters.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Jono?
What's the question?
He's gone. He's clocked out. No, I was just talking about, you know, like, as well as you know, kind of touring in, with, like, local acts and stuff like that. Like, both of you got to play some bigger shows with, like, international acts as well.
The international stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, it was always a pleasure to be able to grace those stages with such large axe.
Mm. Yeah.
And yeah, you'd in the back of your mind, I think more than just like, I hope we don't fuck this up. It's like, I hope we do a good job.
Mm.
Mm. Like, I hope it translates because, you know, you get there to a big venue like that and they've got crews, like they've got a finely tuned touring machine.
Yeah.
And like crew people, roadies and stuff, like serious roadies. And we're just kids who've driven our shit there in a car. And the yeah, you feel so out of place because it's not a world that we're accustomed to, having people to like set gear up for you and that kind of thing. So
yeah, yeah.
They're also business around those places as well. Like they're very roadies and sound guys and all that kind of AV crew have a certain thing about them. They're all kind of, then they can come across as cold or grumpy, but they're not usually. It's just because they're focused.
Yeah, in that work environment, yeah.
But for the first time you're there, you're just like, oh, am I stepping on people's toes? Like, am I in the way? I feel like I'm not doing the right thing. And it can be a little intimidating for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So pretty much all the bands and the, like we said, the bands and the projects we've been talking about are all kind of being talked about in the past tense because, like, there came that point where both of you moved and went to Berlin. And, like, that was a time where, I guess, Parades had kind of run its course and, like, things had wrapped up, I guess, with the solo stuff. And, like, you played on the last Little Scout record, but you weren't, like, in the band. Right. And, yeah, like, by that point, you kind of left. And,
yeah,
that's a big, big decision. Like, I can imagine that would have been weighing pretty heavily on your minds when you decided to do it. But, like, talk us through that process and what kind of sparked it.
I don't think we really considered it from a career perspective at the time.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, now I wouldn't make that decision so flippantly, I suppose. But at the time, yeah, Parades had finished. You had to write another Boulay album.
Mm-hmm.
I had just gotten a grant for studying music, essentially. Like, yeah. It was just this weird grant that the government gave. And we were just like, why don't we just do the thing? We'd been talking about moving to Berlin for years.
Yeah.
And we did it, and we got a little studio space there, and Jono wrote his third album?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the third one, yeah.
Third album. And we travelled heaps, which was great.
Mm.
It wasn't, I just don't feel like it was a super, like, looking back, it wasn't the most responsible decision for our careers.
Well, I think because the idea had spawned, like, as we were a bit younger, and we're just like, let's move overseas. Oh, let's bring everyone with us. We'll all go overseas. It'll be great. And then the years go by, and you're like, okay, you know, it's probably not realistic that everyone can come with us overseas, so let's just move overseas. And hopefully, maybe, like, someone, one or two of them might also join us eventually.
Yeah.
Mm.
But, like, of course, it's silly to assume what someone's plan is. So
yeah.
I think we got over there and it was kind of hard to find mutual musicians that we could have in our bands and that we could collaborate with and that kind of thing.
Also, we should, say we've been so fortunate with the kind of musicians that we've worked with. Like,
oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, very, very talented people.
Yeah. And years of history of with those people.
Yeah.
So then, it's kind of, that came a lot more in focus when we moved there. And we're like, there's like, you know, you have to start from scratch and try and meet people and try and make, you can't compare those connections that you had at home with ones that you're just making now because they're fresh, like they're brand new.
The history.
Yeah.
But it was cool because that's how Party Dozen started. So we didn't have any one else to really play with, and then we decided that we would make a band, and then since then we pretty much play in all of each other's projects now, I think.
Like, at the time, like, you were both kind of moving away from acts that, you know, like you said, your first band, and for you, Jono, the band that, like, were people that have been with you throughout your entire musical career. Like, I can imagine that would have been, I don't know, maybe a difficult thing to let go, but, like, maybe in hindsight, it was just, like, it would have been easier than you thought. Like, I've never really had that. Like, I can only see it from an outsider's perspective, but I remember when Parades split up, and I'm just like, fuck, that's it. Like, this band that I spent so many years with. But, like, I'm just an outsider. Like, that was your life for years, you know? And same with Little Scout. Like, I was, you know, I'd been seeing you both play in those bands for years, and then to have that kind of taken away was just kind of surreal. It was a bit of a shock, you know?
Yeah, you realize that it's just nothing can last forever.
Yeah.
I think the parade scene was tricky because it was so sudden. You know, like, it wasn't like with Little Scout, it made a lot of sense for us because, like, I hadn't been there for the last thing. I actually got to play the last Little Scout show we ever played.
Yeah, yeah.
In Woodford, because I was home for Christmas.
Yeah.
From overseas, and that was so special. And we had all the Taroo members there as well, so it was like this big stage, and we decided that we wouldn't start. We had been working on some new material while I was in London and they were in Brisbane.
Yeah.
And we were like emailing ideas and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Miro wanted to focus more on producing.
Uh-huh.
And I think Mel and Pat just felt like it had run its course as yeah. Little Scout, and that maybe if they continue writing, they wouldn't mind like rebranding. But it was kind of like, you know, just a slow fade out for Little Scout. But I feel like for parades, it was just like one day you were playing shows and then the next you weren't.
Yeah.
I think we just didn't make it very public.
No.
I think we decided, you know, okay, we'll stop. We'll stop at this point and then just call it.
Yeah.
Was that tough for you? Like knowing in the back of your head, like everything that that core group of people had gone through?
I don't know. I guess I knew that we were going to keep making stuff. Like whoever was keen, we're going to continue to make something. And
true. You and Dan haven't really stopped making stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since then.
Because I know, yeah, like band names and band like concepts can come and go, but you know, like we were saying, those friends that stick around that you can work with,
yeah,
are kind of what's core to that. If you want to keep creating, you've got people with a history of writing music with, like you can always do something with them. If you've got a cool idea, they'll always be keen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really nice to have those kind of people around you because you can, they'll help you with your ideas.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, where does Snakeface kind of come into the trajectory?
I guess Snakeface was rather early as well. Like, we were playing around 2010, 2011.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As well, and recording. Yeah. I guess it was just with another separate group of friends that eventually all became one big group of friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was taking care of our punk side that we had left behind when we turned into parades.
Yeah.
So that was ticking that box for us because we still wanted that stuff. You know, you still want to rock out and have stand there with your guitar feedbacking, making horrendous noise.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. And then the snake facing like really hit a peak when we all went away and recorded Oberon. And
obviously, I remember that. Yeah.
Man, but they just had like all five boys were just like, everybody come. If you have something to add to the album, like, do it. So, I mean, we put some clarinet on some of it.
Yeah, it was just free reign.
Free reign with all friends, and the album was so special because we were all living in this house in the country for, like, a week.
Yeah.
Just recording.
That was a really fun time.
It was really good.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, after everything kind of ends with Little Scout, what's the first thing that you do after that musically? Like, did you kind of have to take a moment to kind of get ideas together of what would happen next? Or was it always kind of in the back of your head where you'd go from there?
No, I didn't do anything for ages.
Yeah.
Not really. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I was still playing music. What did we do? We started Party Dozen.
Yeah.
And then we did some, when we first got back to Australia, which was almost 2 years ago now, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I joined the Jonathan Boulay band and the John Steele Singers band.
Yeah.
And did that. And collaborated with Mel and Pat's new project Pines for just doing some sax on their stuff. And I sort of did that for a while until last year. So it's like a few years in between. Mm-hmm. And then end of last year, I was like, I think it's time to do some pop music again. And I just sat down and started smashing out the Exhibitionist stuff.
Yeah. And I can imagine that would have been a full circle thing. Like, you know, you started out as a solo artist and then kind of, you know, kind of stepped into other people's projects. And then after all this time, you've finally come back to doing something essentially just by yourself.
Yeah. I've done quite a lot of session work as well.
Yeah.
I've done some session. I did some session. Actually, that's not true. I didn't have that many years off because I went on tour with Henry Wagons in the US during that time overseas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so I've, like, I feel like all of the stuff that I've done has made me a good performer, so I feel ready to do a solo project now, probably more than I ever have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that, by the same token, that will kind of be the first proper time that you'll be in focus, like, center of attention, you know, apart from that music festival all those years ago. Yeah,
totally. At, 28 years old. Finally doing it again. But it's good. I wouldn't change it.
Yeah.
It's been a good, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, while that's happening, Jono, you've kind of taken more of a backseat, Jonathan Boulay, quote-unquote, as a project hasn't really done much. Like, there was the one-off show last year, and things have been relatively quiet on that front, and you've kind of moved back towards the drum throne. There was the one-off Snakeface show last year as well. Yeah. Yeah, like, has it been an interesting thing for you from, you know, having all that attention on you specifically to kind of being, you know, back behind the kit and back behind that side of things?
I think, the context has changed. Like, I'm not in the limelight doing the front man thing.
Yeah.
But I'm still, I still feel like I'm just as active, in a different way. Like, I'm on the drums a bit more. I've been, like, Party Dozen for me is ticking many boxes.
And it's cool because it's, like, 50-50. I feel neither of us are in the limelight at any one, for any one show. Like, it's really...
Yeah.
It really feels like it's a collaborative thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say you're any less prolific as a songwriter. Like, you work on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm just sort of focusing on different aspects of still doing music, but just, not the individualistic frontman kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Which is, that's one thing, and I think a lot of people grab onto that because it's very easy for people to connect with, like, a single person who's singing, and they have, like, you can hear their voice, you hear their lyrics. Like, that's a very direct thing.
Yeah.
But I think I connect more with other aspects of music stuff.
Yeah. I mean, do you foresee that as being something that you'll ever return to?
Yeah, maybe. I'm open to it. I'm thinking about it all the time. Like, if a good idea comes through, I'll try and execute it for sure.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I'm just sort of trying to be as creative as I can in whatever way I can.
Yeah. Tell us about the first Party Dozen show.
The first show?
First show was at Swerve Society.
Yeah, Newtown Social Club.
Oh, cool. R.I.P.
R.I.P. It was pretty weird.
That was fun. Yeah. It was nice. But
it was always going to be weird, let's be honest. That's
true.
We hadn't sorted out any kind of sampler setup or anything like that, so at that point I had the loops that we'd play to I had them on iTunes.
Oh, yeah.
It's so bad. On a laptop. I really hate laptops on stage.
I don't think we had another choice at the time.
And though. Yeah, that was the only choice. So I had iTunes open with the loops that we'd play for each song.
Yeah, because we didn't have our samplers because they were in a box from the United Kingdom shipped to Australia.
Classic.
I didn't have my alto saxophone either, so I played the first show on the tenor, which was just a challenge.
For context, is that smaller or bigger?
It's bigger, and it's harder to, like, it's harder to squeal on than the alto, so it was hard work.
But the show was fun. I think it was good. Right. It wasn't a lot of people, but that's probably the better kind of first show that you won.
Yeah. Was our next show at Blackwire? Also RIP, all of the venues.
Everyone we've played is shutting down. That's weird.
Yeah.
Look out.
No, I don't know. Maybe it was Blackwire.
Blackwire or Beat Disc, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you played with Clowns. I remember that.
Friends
of the show, former guests.
Yeah. And then we also played, it was one of the bands who played with us last night, Extreme Misanthropy Crew, except at Beat Disc. Except when they played that show, they were the loudest band I've ever heard.
Yeah, they're fucking terrifying.
Was outside with earplugs in and it was still, like, crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, fucking Ben and Pete are savages when it comes to that sort of stuff.
Seriously.
I'm just like, how do you guys do that?
Yeah.
Like, they've always been in noisy bands, but, like, that one in particular, they just let their flag fly, man.
Yeah. Last night they played a really chilled, beautiful set. I love that they can do either.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah. It's a testament to their abilities.
Yeah, to their musical abilities. And ideas as well. Like, the fact that they're not, like, they don't have to rely on brutal noise to...
cover everything up.
So for context, yesterday Party Dozen officially launched their debut album, sold out show at 107 in Redfern. How was it? I got to know how it all went down.
It was great. It was so much fun. It was just like a party. It was like a house party. It was like a family gathering. It was just all of our friends and family were there, and it was, you couldn't turn anyway without seeing someone that you know and that you love.
And yeah, looking up from the audience was just,
it's very warm.
Very warm. But it was cool. We had our mate Henry doing sound, and he's just a weapon. So he was...
Oh, Henry used to work at New South Social. Yeah. Oh, what a perfect angel.
Yes.
Henry fucking is
a one of the funniest fucking dudes in the world.
Seriously.
God damn, he's got some stories.
Oddball, yeah.
Oh, love him too.
Yeah, he did a great job. He set up some visuals for us that were just off the chain. Crazy. They were really crazy.
Really
and
cool.
Yeah.
Audio reactive, and it was just so... Yeah, it all came together really nicely, and we had a great night.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is easily the the least accessible project either of you have ever worked on. And I say that with so much love. Mm. But at the same time, like, this has gotten some of the most attention that either of you have ever received as musicians. And I can imagine that's a really kind of weird kind of in-between so to find yourself in.
Yes. But it's pleasing.
It's pleasing because we are so passionate about it.
Like, yeah.
It's like, it's like the project, you know, without this, I don't think that we would be as happy with our other output. But
that's right.
With Party Dozen, it just boosts everything else up. Like, it makes it makes me excited to do pop because it's like, well, I've got this other thing that's satisfying, like, that side of my brain as well. But, yeah, when we put up, like, a live video and it just went nuts and so strange, you know? And I was laughing with my friend Fez because I had told him how, you know, we'd labored over this, like, exhibitionist film clip for a couple of days and, you know, made this whole thing. It was beautiful, edited it properly, blah, blah, blah. And we got my sister and her boyfriend to just film us recording a song in Brisbane. And that video just stretched so much further. Mm. So you just can't, like, you can't bloody pick it. But we're so happy that it did because, like, we love it.
Mm.
Super cool.
Yeah, fucking A. And I guess one of the best things about Party Dozen is that it is very sustainable. Like, it's just the two of you, you know, there's one instrument a piece, you know, it's pretty easy to, you know, set up and get going. And like, now there's more and more attention on it. There's more opportunity for more shows and more touring and whatnot. So
yeah,
much easier than, you know, taking 5-6 people around the country.
That's right.
Very true. That's right. Yeah. And it's weird. Like my parents love Party Dozen.
Really?
Yeah. Because what they hear in it is like the psychedelic kind of vibes.
Oh, sure.
So they hear that. They don't hear like the really gritty, gross stuff that I personally hear.
Yeah.
That really satisfies me. And then one of our friend's sister was like, I just think it's just so beautiful. And I was like, what?
Huh.
How? I think it's just this project that resonates differently, and what people want to hear is what they end up hearing. Which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that people can draw different things from the same thing.
Yeah.
And, when is the first exhibitionist show?
It's going to be in, well, it's going to be in definitely in September, but hopefully August.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And how are you feeling going into that?
Good. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I finished the EP, so that's all done. And then, we've started rehearsals and it's kind of slowly coming together, which is cool.
Yeah, amazing. And Jono, do you have any other kind of projects or ideas in the back of your head for what you'll do next away from P12?
P12.
I love P12 so
much. I'm so into
it's
P12.
So good.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Oh, I love it.
Other projects that we've got going. Dan from Parades.
Ah, yes.
Myself and Tim, who used to play in Snakeface.
Right.
We've got a 3-piece now, and we're called Arse.
Of course.
And it's, like I was saying before, scratching my punk itch. It's a pretty punk style band.
Just
a punk band.
It also gets you away from the drum kit, which is nice.
That's right. I get a chance to play the bass.
Oh, dope.
Which I love not having to play drums in a punk band because it's the worst job that anyone can have in one of those bands.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Because you're expected to work as hard as you can for the entirety of the set. Mm. And you can't work hard without busting your balls and sweating.
Yeah.
But you can stand there with a bass guitar and not sweat and still be praised.
Just remember your three notes. Just
yeah, exactly.
That's it.
It's cooler if you're not thrashing around and sweating.
Yeah.
So I'm into that.
Fucking A. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, yeah, as someone who's gotten to see you guys through every single phase, it's really, really so wonderful to see. And I always love watching both of you play.
It's nice to have nice had to you see, around all this time, too.
It's nice to see David James Young in the audience. Oh, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, before we get out of here, we are going to get your favourite and your least favourite shows that you have ever played. Best and worst shows Ooh. Ever. So okay. we can just, yeah, do this on the individual basis. So it's up to you if you want to go worst then best or best then worst. Like, yeah, however, the narrative is yours, really.
All right. My best show that I have ever played was with the John Steele Singers. It was a Jonathan Boulay and John Steele Singers at the Triffid in Brisbane.
Oh, wow.
Pretty fun show. Just got off stage with Boulay and then had to go on stage with the John Steele Singers, and it was the funnest show I think I've ever played. I just danced and did heaps of sax and heaps of singing and drank beers the whole show. It was just like on fire. The whole band was so good. Nailing it. It was great.
That final John Steele show at Newtown Social was one of the most fun shows.
So much fun.
It was like, amazing.
Yeah, if you could make all of your shows that fun, you'd be killing it.
Oh my god. I remember fucking doing Rainbow Kraut. You just
Jono
just pulled a trombone out of nowhere. Jono could not play the trombone, for the record.
No, sir.
Just gave it a good old honk.
Straight into the back of Pete and Kirsty's head.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell is that?
Kirsty's trying to sing, but she can't stop laughing. Like, God, that was so fucking great. What about what was your worst?
Worst show. Oh, there was this. I actually played with Parades for a while.
Yeah, right.
And we had this show at a lumber lounge in Brisbane, and just none of the gear was working. Like, the PA was not working.
Oh, that was dodgy, wasn't it?
It sounded so bad, and I couldn't hear my voice. And we'd had such a lovely afternoon of rehearsals, and it was sounding awesome. And then we got there, and I couldn't hear anything I was singing, and it was uncomfortable. And I wouldn't let them open the doors because it sounded so bad, and I was being really bossy. And just like, you can't open the doors yet. We need another half an hour because we have to be able to hear. And it was just
there was one of the issues that I remember. The sound guy was kind of confused and walking around the PA, and we're just like, what's going on? He's like, I don't know, something's wrong. And we looked, and the PA hadn't been turned on, and we were just like, the PA's not on. Like, the guy
holy shit.
And he was just confused. He's like, it's not coming, like, I don't understand, it's not coming out. Like,
it was torturous.
Tried turning it off and on again.
Tried turning it off and on.
Yeah, it was torturous just not knowing whether anything you were doing was A, coming through, or whether you just looked like an idiot, or B, if anything you were singing was in tune or in time, or, you know, all the things that you, like, the one thing that you need when you play live is just to be able to hear yourself.
Yeah.
Everything else is okay. Like, you know, but brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. Mm. Jono, what do you got?
I don't know. I can't really think of a lot of really bad gigs that we've had, you know, like, just in terms of vibes or just actually, yes, okay, we played on the Boulay second album tour.
Mm-hmm.
We played in, I think it was Maroochydore or somewhere north there.
Mm-hmm.
And the tour was being put on by a company, and they'd set the ticket prices because they had funded the whole tour. So they were trying to recoup their money from putting us on, and I didn't know how much tickets were, and I went to walk into the venue, and it said it was like a $30 ticket on the door, and I was like, that's a lot of money. Like, I wouldn't pay $30 to see us. Like, that's a shit ton of money. And I walked in, and we played this show to Wolf and Cub, who was supporting us.
Yeah.
And maybe five other people in this big, it's like a big 200 people room, and there was five people in there. It was completely empty.
So brutal.
And I was just like, oh my god. Because
you guys were
good
at that point as well. Like,
we'd become a lot better by that point. Yeah. And it was just like, why the fuck are we here? Like, this is ridiculous. Oh. Didn't anyone look at the ticket sales and like cancel this shit? Because it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I just remember we, you know, though I remember at that time I'd always say that if it was a shit attendance, it's always a good gig for us to get better at what we do, because we, you know, you, there's nothing to draw on. You can't draw any energy from anywhere, so you have to generate it yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess we just played and played as hard as we could, and it was just, no one knew about it. It was really, it was kind of sad. We were just like, let's just forget about that gig and get to the Sydney gig.
Yeah. That was that the Metro one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that was a good one.
So yeah, we got to that one and it was just like, yeah, this is, this makes up for all the other gigs that didn't work out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That fucking right.
Yeah.
So what was your best?
Well, probably one of those, I guess. I mean, I love...
Same tour.
I love all these Party Dozen shows. They're always, yeah, they're always really, night really
was
fun.
Was a pretty big high.
But yeah. But yeah, we had some incredible shows with the Bullet crew.
What about the that Falls Festival show? That was pretty special.
Falls.
That you did with Bullet. It's like a video of it online. It's insane.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like big shows were okay. There's, you know, it's hard to feel a lot of vibe at those big festivals because it's such a giant crowd and, you know, half of them aren't really into you. But probably the smaller ones, like the Metro shows for me were always really good. Like the FBI Sounds Like series when they used to put on shows.
Sure.
I remember playing one of those and we came on stage and I was jacked up on Red Bull or something. And yeah. I was so excited.
Here he is.
And they introduced us and I think I jumped on stage and I was just like, ah, and I hadn't picked up my guitar. And I'm like, start the song, Woody, start the song. And he's like, but you haven't got your guitar. I'm like, I don't care. And he just starts ripping into it. I'm just like, yes! And it was just a really fucking fun time.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
That's incredible. Okay, so the Party Dozen record is out now.
Yeah.
In all good stores.
Yes.
It's called...
The Living Man.
The Living Man.
They rejected my previous entries of The Burning Man or The Running Man.
Oh, yes.
Running Man.
The Running Man.
Damn it.
Just a little holographic cover, just doing The Running Man on the front. But, you know, someday. Pretty much everything you guys have released is out on Bandcamp and on Spotify and on all the usuals. There's a lot of stuff to get through, but I would absolutely recommend all of it. But in particular, Take Your Life and Foreign Tapes, which are two albums that changed my life. And, just still huge, huge parts of my life to this very, very day. And, the fact that I've gotten to stay friends with you guys all this time, yeah, means the absolute world. So thank you guys so much for doing this.
Thanks, David. You're the best.
Oh, no, you are. Stop it. No, you hang up.
No, you are.
I'm David James Jones and all my friends.